I'd like to amend Section 12 to just incorporate the word Pacifica shall employ a national programming coordinator whose responsibility it is to implement Pacifica programming, period. Strike the rest of the paragraph. Let's go.
I second that.
Okay.
Point of order?
Yeah, I was going to get to that, but go ahead and make a point of order.
Point of order is that we were already reminded earlier by the chair that we cannot proceed with the hiring of a national program coordinator until the programming policy is in place. That was already the agreement. Now, the only way you could pursue that, Sandy, is to make a motion to set to rescind that original motion of the board, which would take a two-thirds vote at this point, and then you can proceed with your motion.
Point of information.
Yeah.
Would this be the last discussion concerning this session? So there is a possibility that
depends on whether you
employ some program policy in this meeting and get that through.
It depends on whether you continue debate it after I can have rituals.
Mr. Chairman, just some information about the thinking behind my motion.
Would you?
I've been trying to do this now.
Okay, since I haven't yet heard a second, I did hear a second. Would anybody mind my allowing Ambrose to comment on this motion, comment on the context of the substitute motion.
Sure.
We'll deal with the procedural issues in a second.
Could I say that I don't have a copy of Mr. Warren's motion?
Okay.
I don't have a copy of it.
Okay, so can you do that? And then before we continue, can I have a motion to extend 15 minutes, please?
I would move to extend 15 minutes.
Is there any objection? Hearing none. 15 minutes. Go ahead, Ambrose.
The whole purpose of this was to get this policy implemented. How do you do it? The board has to authorize the hiring of staff person. And it says whose responsibility is to implement specific programming policy and support the production and distribution of mission-driven programming throughout the Pacifica family, blah, blah, blah. The central focus is to help establish a constructive working relationship. Then we go to 8. What does 8 say? He has to evaluate what is going on in the entire system. Compliance with programming policy requires local stations, we told the local stations we wanted them their input, to pursue structured effort to ensure that program schedules and programming fulfills the mission, and to identify aspects of the mission which are absent or require improvement. And out of local evaluation processes, we hope that network-wide approaches will emerge that help us establish conditions that produce programming that sounds good and attracts the most talented programmers, blah, blah, blah. In other words, we're saying, for God's sake, go back and go to all the resources throughout the network, get the information, develop a program, and then come back to us with a developed program. That's the role of the executive director and the person he hires, and in terms of the finances, the CFO. That's all I'm saying we ought to do.
Yeah.
I think that I fundamentally disagree with Ambrose's interpretation of that particular part of it, and I would really move to divide the question. If we're still considering his motion, I think we need to divide this question. 8 can certainly be implemented without a programming coordinator. It doesn't require a programming coordinator, but 12 certainly is about having a programming coordinator. So I would like to see those two. I move to divide the question.
We have Sandy's thing before us. Now, I want to clarify what Sandy said and what was seconded. When you talked about dividing, were you talking about dividing? So Amherst's thing, motion says two things. One, move 12 and 8, and then two, refer the rest of it to the executive. Are you dividing move 12 and 8 from refer the rest to the executive, and then you were making a secondary motion to amend 12 and 8? Was that the intent?
I was trying to amend Section 12, but okay. It makes perfect sense to include with my motion.
Okay,
then to move Section 8.
Okay, then is there any objection to our accepting Ken's motion to divide the issue of 12 and 8? Are you moving to divide 12 and 8 and the referral of the rest of it?
I'm only moving to separate the consideration of
12 from 8.
12 from 8. Okay, would you, I'm going to ask that, can we separate 12, 8, and the motion to refer, because I think...
Or that would be a complete division of the question.
Okay, is there any objection to a complete division of the question? Okay, wonderful. We're getting somewhere. Now let's start, yes.
Point of information. Sandy's motion wasn't to refer. It was that we would, he moves to divide and he did to amend section 12, because that we would then vote on that.
Right.
And I understood that to be that that would be the portion of the program policy we're passing today.
Thank you. 12.0 is now before us, and we're, because there was a previous motion which called for a referral.
And don't forget to take the later amendments first.
His motion was to divide out those portions from Ambrose's motion and amend it. So this is functionally the same. If you'll let me do this, we'll get through it. Trust me. Okay? 12.0 is now before us as an item. Sandy, you had an amendment to 12.0.
Yes, Secretary has that. She'd like to read it.
Go ahead.
Moves that Civica shall employ a network programming coordinator, comma, whose responsibility it is to implement the Civica programming.
Okay, so that is stricken the end of the section 12.0.
Point of order.
Go ahead.
That doesn't make any sense. I think you meant to include the next word, policy.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
So what, point of information then, what does it mean to implement the Civica programming? That's, we have 5 program directors that do that. So what is this?
The program directors implement station.
Right, given the title, I think the rest of the column.
I don't follow. I don't understand.
National programming, implement national programming. If you want to use that word.
Can we agree that the clarification is the intent is national program, Civica national program? Don?
No, I think it's appropriate to add that word, because this individual is not implementing all of Pacific programming, but clearly the word left out is national programming.
So without objection, we'll modify the proposed amendment to be national.
Point of information.
Go ahead.
Can I ask Greg, if this motion is adopted, going back to what you said earlier today, would you see that that before you actually put out an ad for this position, that you would come back to the board with a draft job description for approval, and then after the board, which could happen at the April teleconference, for instance, and then after that, that nothing would move forward until the board had approved the job description. Is that correct?
Yes, in terms of advertising a job description, and I would use, your consent approval items, which preceded as part of the job description as well, which implements new voices and the affiliates. And, I mean, those things that you passed earlier, 1.1, 1.5, 5, 7, and 10, provide a basis for developing a job description, at least at the beginning.
Is there further debate, or may we go to a vote on whether to, and the vote would be to substitute Sandy's language for 12.0 as it presently exists. May we vote on that? Yes. No, that's not correct. His motion was to move 12 and 8 and ask the rest of it to go to the ED. So we're voting now to substitute Sandy's language for the language in your packet for under 12.0. All those in favor of substituting the language, please raise your hand. All those opposed? All those opposed? Therefore, it is now substituted. It is now 12.0 that is before us as substituted. Can you read it?
Can I read the Weinman?
Yes, what's now before us?
Pacifica shall employ a network programming coordinator whose responsibility it is to implement Pacifica national programming.
All those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. Okay, item 8 is next before us. Can you read item 8? The no is just in my head. All those opposed? Okay, item 8.
I'd just like to formally protest. You know, people that haven't even read the document, they're now trying to make up program policy off the top of their head. This is not a program policy. This is a joke. I understand that there are individuals...
One order.
I'm going to recognize it as a point of personal privilege from someone who's spent now a year on a rather extensive document.
I understand that there are individuals in this network that do not want any policy or any accountability for the programming that's produced. But this is not the way to go about passing policy. You cannot sit here and make things up when you have not read the document, you have not worked on the programming committee. If you don't want to pass it, don't pass it. But don't make up something that's far less coherent than things that we labored over for a long time to put together. This is a mockery.
Okay. We're now at item 8, program evaluation, which reads, compliance with programming policy requires local stations to pursue a structured effort to ensure that program schedules and programming fulfills the mission and to identify aspects of the mission that are absent or require improvement. Out of local evaluation processes, we hope that network-wide approaches will emerge that help us establish conditions that produce programming that, quote, sounds good and that attracts the most talented programmers, producers, and voices. Local stations must conduct community outreach by means of remote broadcasts and performing regular community needs assessments, meetings in underserved communities. Community needs assessments can also take the form of live broadcasts of town hall meetings. Program evaluation and programmer self-evaluation processes should challenge programmers to explain how they fulfill Pacifica mission, the Pacifica mission, and to detail various ways in which they strive to make their programs educational, informal, and informative and entertaining. We must have clear program goals and programs to provide services to our communities via the airways. We do not have time to debate this item, so I'm going to call the vote on it now. Yes.
Yeah, you divided the motion. I already voted on 12.
Right.
What is the rest of it?
That's
to
move
it
in.
That's your motion.
No.
It's my
motion.
The adoption of aid to be implemented through the action of the ED and CFO, and that's specific to be developed for the entire national programming policy.
Wait, that last part after the and is a set, we're going to do it separately. So it's 8.0 and.
To be implemented
in
the action of the
EDC
vote.
Stop.
No, that wasn't the motion.
We divided it. So we
divided
it.
Only 12. You did not touch 8.
We're
doing with 8.
We divided it into 3 parts. 12, 8, and
the referral of the rest of the items to the executive director for development. Yes.
In fairness to Andrew's purpose here, I think it's only fair to take up part 3 right before you get to part 1. Because he's actually requesting some referral of this. So it's only fair to take up the referral question prior to independently considering the item.
But it doesn't make sense to refer to the other items. My understanding of the motion is move 12, move 8, have the executives develop the implementation, and refer the other items to them for further development.
If the motion, if either a section is moved and passed, then the question of referring it is mooted.
The referral is a referral of the rest of the document, not of 12 and 8.
That's right, I understand.
It's moving those two, asking the executives to implement those two, and referring the other items of the policy to them. So we're now at voting on 8. Yes?
Pardon me. Wasn't this Ken Freeland's motion to divide Section 12, 8, and motion to refer?
Yes.
So it should say, and motion to refer the other items?
Portions of the policy to the executives. So we're now dealing with item 8. Okay? And we're at time, so we're going to vote on it. The other unpassed portions.
I move to extend by 10 minutes.
I second that.
Okay. Is there any objection to spending 10 minutes on 8? There's an objection. So call all those in favor of extending by 10 minutes to consider 8. Please raise your hand.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 10.
All those opposed? Okay, who would like to speak? Bob.
Two things. First, I'd like to move to amend Ambrose's motion to. Are we discussing the motion to refer all the other parts?
No.
Okay. All right. On
section, which is somehow appropriate. Section.
Okay.
I'm ready for it.
All right. On section 8. Since Rob clarified earlier that this document can still be tweaked somewhat by the committee, then I'm not going to move any of this as amendments, but I just wanted to share some feedback from members of the unpaid staff organizing committee that finally had time after our pledge drive ended to review the document.
This is a debate on the question. If it's not a vote or an amendment, I'd like to ask that we do this at another time. There'll be lots of opportunities for feedback.
Well, this isn't about wording. I'll limit it to one point, which is very substantive, which I would have moved as an amendment, but in the interest of time. And that is that this and other parts of the document should definitely make explicit reference to the Pacifica race and nationality policy that, for instance, in evaluating both an individual program and an entire program schedule at a station, that those principles that were set forth by the board 3.5 years ago be taken into account.
That's clear enough language. Would you like to make that motion to add that language?
Well, we could, yeah. I was just trying to expedite things.
Go ahead.
Okay. So then I would move that to add the phrase, evaluation processes should include review of individual programs and program schedules for implementation of the Pacifica race and nationality policy.
Okay. Is there any objection to that amendment? Seeing none, it's adopted. Okay, other debate on 8.0 is amended? Okay, then let's take it to a vote. All those in favor of 8.0 is amended, please raise your hand. Oh my God, we're going to do program evaluation. Stop. Press this.
Put your hands up.
Okay, given the time, nays, noes. Okay, given the time, I'd like to ask that we consider the rest of this and the referral to tomorrow's unfinished business section, because I'm concerned that we have reservations at 9 o'clock sharp tonight. We have still not dealt with the CTB board composition. Is there any objection to our considering the referral of the rest of the items to the executives and failing that, the other items tomorrow during unfinished business? Okay, seeing no objection, then we'll move the agenda. The next thing is the what was postponed, and we're going to have to forego our break, I would consider that one. This is the CTV requirements and board composition and committee composition. It's slated for 45 minutes. It's really three issues. One is the question of the CTV requirements, and then the other two items are the FSRN RPI negotiation task force and whether our affiliate directors would like to join committees. So can we have a summary, maybe from Lonnie, since I know you've been dealing with this, about the issue of board composition and CPP funding?
As you know, we receive $1.8 million from our Corporation for Public Broadcasting, have been doing so for a number of years. We have recent issues that surface around meeting some of the incentives that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting makes available. What their incentives state is that every station shall have a community advisory board. And the requirement is a little vague, but it doesn't, we interpret to mean that that advisory board should have minutes and should meet at least once a year. The executive director and I will be talking with them directly on the 17th of April. We're coming to D.C. for that purpose. So that each station that does not have a community advisory on board and cannot demonstrate so, according to the regulations, they lose their entire grant. Not part of it, their entire grant. I did send along to the board the specific regulation as part of an email. The second area of exposure for us in relation to the CTV is that they require that each station have at least 35% of their audience be a minority audience. And there's something around minority revenue too that's a little bit murky, and we need to find out what that means. They have a formula which is a little bit arcane, so we'll try to get some clarity on how the minority funding part of minority audience requirements work. That's most stations do. It's just one station that may be a question mark around whether they meet the audience requirements. But the one that concerns this board is the third one, which is that the requirements are that the governing board, which means the PNB, should have at least 50% minority. Not 51, 50. And do women count? The answer was no. What is considered a minority? CPB website does have some classification of what and whom fall into the minority category. I won't go over to them, but go into them. It's Asian Pacific Islanders, it's African Americans, it's Hispanics, not white. The exposure for us would be that Station A, for example, couldn't demonstrate community advisory board activity, then they would lose the entire grant. Some stations have grants that total $500,000. And it would be a severe blow for that station. On the board minority issue, the loss that we would likely look at would be $352,000, and it would impact each station differently. As for example, KPFA, the loss would be $100,000. And I think I sent out an email detailing in a spreadsheet showing how each station would be impacted. It's differential. They have this formula, which, again, is arcane, but they did send it out. They did send it along to the board. So those are the exposures along. Deadlines. What is the timeline? Timeline is that there's a certification process that occurs in June where we have to certify whether our board is in compliance, whether our CAB are in compliance. Well, we've been told, not by CA, we've been told that maybe there might be some room in the OCA, but I have not been told that. And so we need to have face-to-face with the various people at Corporation for Public Broadcasting that do make the decisions. Not one person, I understand, there's a little committee. So we will be looking to get verification next month, April, around what any wiggle room that exists.
Okay, so really our challenge is by June to get this board to a point of compliance. Lydia?
If any of the directors are interested in helping me craft a bylaws amendment to increase our at-large to two seats, because at 23, in other words, if we were to add one, and we've already passed the time deadline for that, we still don't make the 50%. But if we increase to 24, we make the 50% if those two at-large seats are people of color. Obviously, that's the goal. And it would not, in my opinion, require a membership vote. And it would still get passed. If we pass it tomorrow, we would have 2 months of announced on air, and then we could pass it at the PMB meeting, and within 30 days pass it at the LSB and get it just in the nick of time for June. And in the interim, we could start identifying those folks that we would like to add. So if any directors that are interested in supporting me and helping me craft the language, please sit next to me at dinner tonight.
I don't believe you're correct. I think the bylaws say any change to the number or manner of election of the directors requires a vote of membership. I don't think we can do it in the bill.
I know. I said sit next to me if you don't believe that I'm correct. But I believe that I am, and so
okay.
Come and challenge me.
Well, I don't know. There's only going to be two people able to sit next to you unless we form a crowd.
Mr. Chair, it also says, does it also not say that you have to select our at-large by February 15th?
Yes, or March 15th.
Presumably, if we would make those that
change,
March
15th, we would
extend
the corresponding dates,
obviously. I understand. Okay, I think I understand what you're getting at. Well, that would be one sort of possible solution, and we could take up that motion tomorrow and do business. As a proposal, if it can really work. Okay. Sorry, Mary?
Mr. Chair, Lonnie, is there any station in our all five stations that does not meet the requirement of CAB? Do they all have CABs?
Well, any station that doesn't have
them. All five stations, I mean out of five stations.
Out of five stations. I need to be clear with some stations around whether or not they have community advisory boards in place. No, I'm not clear. Okay, I mean, I would love to have a poll here so we can establish
it.
And then, once the board is the major organization at this point that is not in compliance with this board, the stations meet the staff requirement. Most of them do. They have 50% minorities. On the audience, the CPB uses a particular quarter, and I think it's going to be the winter quarter, to make a judgment on audience. And so when we go and talk with them, they'll be looking at those figures and we'll see. But I don't get the feeling that they think we're in jeopardy around audience. So we look okay. We look okay on stage. It's the board, and it's the Community Advisory Board and the PAB that represent the exposures and the
So this out of these five stations, the board composition here is not the one that's here in the department.
Okay, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Pardon me, can you ask a question? I thought it was two out of three things. You had to have 50% minority staff, 50% on your national board, or 35% listeners.
Correct, and then there's a fourth, the CAB, Community Advisory Board.
Well, are you saying that we satisfy the 35% listeners?
I'm saying that most stations do, but the CPB people have not looked at the latest arbitrage, so they'll use probably winter to do that and make this determination.
Did I not just hear you say you thought that we would satisfy that?
I think that they have not mentioned to me that we have a jeopardy there, and I've asked that specifically for them to do an analysis. So they haven't said so. But they said we're close and seem to be okay, but we'll see.
Hi, Teresa. Hold on
a second. Hold on. Mary was next, and then I'll go ahead and ask Rip, Don.
We were told by Carol Pearson yesterday that if a board does not have a CAB, it would lose its whole funding, but it has 3 years to get into compliance. So we would not have to have... Well, that's what she said yesterday.
It wasn't permanent.
Well, I asked her about it afterward, and that's what she told me. I think we would certainly need to find out then, at the very least, because that is what was said. And to say that we have to rush to an emergency move by June doesn't seem, I don't see the emergency that it has to be by June. They're going to look at the Arbitron winter quarter. There is a time frame to get into compliance, so I don't know that we have to pass this emergency measure about trying to find at large people at this meeting. I'm concerned about that.
Okay. I just
hasty action, just because it's only being done like an Egypt thing.
Bob just showed me the section of bylaws, and my memory is incorrect. It's if it extends terms of directors, so we actually could expand the seat. Rip and Don Allen, Bob and Rick.
I just wanted to comment this to make sure that you understand that if you only meet two out of the three, you are going to lose a quarter of the additional subsidy that they get. So what Teresa had been asking about whether we need two out of the three. There is a penalty for not meeting all three.
Great, thank you. Don?
I pass. My understanding from Carol was that captures some of the spirit of it, but it's not quite accurate. Maybe Lonnie can listen to that. That's fine, too. Is that if you meet two out of three, you don't lose the money. But what happens is you have 3 years to lose all the money, though, Mary, is what she said yesterday. Right, but we would lose some of the money if, for instance, a portion of the money if one of the stations only was on one of the three. In other words, if we have the CABs in place, if we continue to meet on two of the three, for all five stations, we don't lose any money. Okay, that's what I understood her to say yesterday. Yeah. But that's correct.
And with the exception of the CAB.
With exception of the CAB. But if say, four of the stations meet on two of the three, but one of them doesn't have the 35% audience share, then we start to lose a portion of the money. And in terms of 35% audience share, all I can say with Arbitrons is the degree to which, working in Southern California, I sense that they undercount certain communities, puts us in a lot of trouble there. Potential trouble, not with DFW, not with WBAI. I'm hoping that they at least get us at that rate. I think they will, but that isn't then the case in Houston and Berkeley. Lonnie thinks it might be, but I do think that an adjustment on the membership of the board would insulate us significantly, and I'm hoping that we can find a way to do that too. You know, right now, I hate to be so mercenary, but it's the order of the day, and I don't want to see us losing this money.
Okay, the next person is Bob.
This is really a case of the chickens coming home to roost. There were many of us throughout this network in 2002 and 2003 when we were collectively engaged in rewriting the bylaws to meet the terms of the legal settlement and to democratize Pacifica, who said a democratization plan that does not include measures to guarantee broad diversity and inclusion of women, people of color, and some of us also talk about other oppressed groups such as lesbians, gays, bisexuals, transgender, people with disabilities, which would not be a full democracy or a true democracy at all. And so now we're finding out the consequences of that. It's not only that it's created imbalanced boards and boards that are not fully meeting the mission to represent the concerns of the communities that were one of the main purposes Pacifica was created to serve and create dialogue about, but also it has this financial consequence because we have a rare case where the federal government is more progressive than Pacifica on racial inclusion. It's a really shameful situation. So this hopefully is an object lesson about the fact that it's once and for all time for us to really focus on the need to amend the bylaws on a permanent basis to ensure some sort of balanced representation, at least by race and gender. But more immediately, I do agree with Lydia and would be happy to help work on drafting an amendment that could solve the immediate problem, which unfortunately we have to deal with the financial impact of losing $350,000 this fiscal year of creating two at-large seats in the short term while we go or creating one additional at-large seat while we then look at the long-term issue of really changing the way that we elect these seats, these boards in particular. And I would just remind people to look at some of the statistics that have been compiled about these boards. Hopefully, as well as nationally, and Houston being the most egregious example, where I believe it's over two-thirds of the board is European Americans, and in a single area that's perhaps 55% people of color. And that's just one statistic. There's also several boards that have a pretty large majority of men over women. All of those outcomes, I think, are unacceptable.
Right. But I agree with board on that point. Clearly, but what I'm interested in is finding a way out. Clearly, I mean, I'm surprised that some reservation is expressed about the CFP. If those issues are at the political position, we think they should be the reality. The CFP is a clear expression of representation of whatever listenership is, or whatever station, and that should be so. And even if there was no financial incentive. So do you have anything on your back for asking people to resign or whatever? Maybe I have done that once before, but clearly that was voluntary and helpful. I mean, do you have any other case where there was some creative solution?
Well, if I can, I know this came up last year.
Yep.
And I think one board member did resign.
Teresa.
Teresa. She did come to the rescue last year. That was one solution. The other one that is, I understand that a local board might look at this issue. That would be one way to deal with it. Have a local board revisit the issue. The ad large solution is on the table, if that's a solution that can be worked out. So the other one is to negotiate with CPB and see the extent to which that we can make some accommodation with them. So that's our intent.
And the last one is a realistic possibility?
Well, I don't know. We don't know. And the contact person we have says that it's a committee decision and he's not prepared to make it on his own. So we're going to talk.
Just a point. So if we did do that, my understanding is we could pass that in June. If we met the first weekend in June, we could have that accomplished by the time the CPB reports were filed, or the CPB reports filed at the end of May.
They want the certification of our status of board membership the early part of June.
So if we met the first weekend in June, I happen to know this is June 2nd. So if we did it then, it would be time. Yes, Rosalinda.
I would just like to know if the directors will be volunteer to cause us this situation to bring it to their
hold on, she's asking a question to the KPMT directors, and then I'm going to leave. KPMT. If you don't want to answer, then Alan is excited.
I'm happy to answer. No, but can I say something for Steph? Because I said this to Deb earlier. Teresa, I think they're very noble to if they are trying to take this upon themselves. But also, in the spirit of what Bob said, I want to point out that this board has 13 men and 9 women. I know they don't care. I know they don't care, but they're a bunch of white women.
We have talked before about that there's a woman of color on the board, on our local. She's the only one that is eligible for, because she's only one been on the board for a year. And I would certainly be willing to step down if she were willing to step up. She has been unwilling. I don't know whether she would change that or not. When you consider the amount of money involved, that's a huge incentive. If you really care about the civic duty, to do what's right.
That's the point that, you know, all of us know how important this is, and I think all of us know the history of CPB funding, and that I think that we should examine ourselves before we put forth the onus on another board and to see if you can come up with proofs.
This is only a question.
Okay.
I can't hear you. I think your issue about the white men, I mean, you have several women here. We have a man from your delegation that might consider it as well.
Ken, you want to weigh in?
I'll wait for Sandy to do all later. I should point out that Sandy was elected in opposition to a person of color, so that's something. I was not.
Yes, Don?
Yeah, we're looking at this issue in KPFK as well. Just prior to the PMP elections in Los Angeles, two very viable, very good candidates, people of color, withdrew their candidacies. We came very close to electing a person of color. So we're looking at this also. So I mean, I think we're going to be able to come up with a resolution, one way or the other.
If I'll just say, you know, I was elected in a coin flip. I wasn't there, but if it comes to it, I can step down in favor of
Speaking to that issue, there are some losses to the board, I think, that would be more monumental than others. So. We'll
work on it. I think where we need to leave this is to consider the motion tomorrow morning that Lydia is contemplating with respect to expanding the at-large seats, which might be a good idea in any case because it gives us access to some skills we don't have on the board without fundamentally diluting the board. Hang on, let me just finish and then I'll recognize you. I think what we're going to have to do, since we cannot deal with it because we don't know all the issues right now, is to put the, say that this is before us, the different LSVs will be looking at it, and we'll come back at our teleconference meetings to deal with it. Yeah, Ken?
Lydia's proposal was to
have two? We have, the bylaws allow us to have one at-large member and by resolution change the board membership from 22 to 23. So what it would do would be allow for a second at-large member, and then the size of the board would still be able to be adjusted by resolution to include one, two, or no at-large people. So what we would do is first change the bylaws to add, and to change that number from 22 to 23 to be from 22 to 24, and then pass a resolution making it 24, and then hopefully at the same meeting elect two additional people so we meet the requirements. So Monday, June 4th, all the managers can fill out something saying the board already applies. That's the way I think it would go.
I'd like the board to consider one other thing, and that's a long-term perspective on this financing. The CPB is a fairly, it could be perceived as a hostile organization. And so, therefore, I think that we really need to be looking at, first of all, not the idea that we can go in there and plead a special case for this, but secondly, that over the long term, is this money that we're always going to be getting, and it's going to be diminishing over time. There's no doubt about that. And so we're going to be needing to look at longer-term finance.
I'm the chair for the board. Speaking of affiliate directors on committees, if the board doesn't object, I'd like to flip the order of the two next two items in this and go straight to the end of this section. I'm just talking about flipping the order. This will take 2 seconds, please. Thank you. The affiliate directors on committees, I'd like to ask whether the affiliate directors are interested, now that they've seen us actually dealing with committees and serving on any of these bodies. It's an exceptional commitment of time and effort. You can think about that if you want to get back to us. But at this time, I hear the program and the committee is open. Would you like to think about it until tomorrow?
What about the affiliates?
I think it needs to until tomorrow. Okay, we'll deal with this tomorrow then in the new business section. I know we will have to have a formal election to elect you to the affiliates committee, which you've already been sitting in, but we can do it tomorrow. Okay, the next thing is the last thing that Teresa wants us to deal with is the Free Speech Trade Unions RFPI Negotiation Task Force. That task force was created to participate with the executive director in the negotiations with Free Speech Radio News, and then later an agreement with Radio for Peace International was included. It's a 3-member task force. Presently, it includes myself and Ambrose as Steve Pierce dropped off. But I believe since it's a new board, we should repopulate it as we repopulate the other committees. So as a task force, there aren't limitations on service from committees. So Are there any volunteers to serve on this committee? Greg, before we ask for it, can you describe your sense of the timetable for the negotiation?
Right, there are a couple of items. I was recently in touch with the original negotiators for Aspen. They're in a sort of state of flux themselves, so we're not sure precisely who we're negotiating with. But I've given them assurances that we would come back and begin with them again during the month of April. I also wanted you to understand that we had also discussed this within the operations group on Thursday and felt that there should be representation from that group as well on the same committee. And we have designated and agreed that Ursula from the affiliates would be a good person because of her previous contact with them and also from representing, in a sense, the East Coast, and Eva as well representing station managers, as well as Lonnie and myself, of course. And so whoever you appoint would join us, and that would be the full complement for our side. What we would need to do is to show the existing proposed agreement from FSRN to an attorney. That's why we need to move on to corporate counsel. But our group, our operations group, also feels that it's important for us to bring something to the table, not simply to respond to their proposal, but to bring, in a sense, a counterproposal to them that offers them some hope and consideration, but is also within the constraints that we feel that we need to act in. So that's during the month of April, we're hoping.
And just to remind, the purpose of this task force is not to do the negotiation, it's to represent the board with the people who are doing the negotiation and be present. Also, obviously, any contract that we'd enter into would come through the contracts policy, and I would be quite, well, I'm not going to make any commitments about what the coordinating committee want to do, but it will come through the contracts policy. Alan, are you volunteering to be on this, or are you asking?
I am. Quick question. So the Ursula, Eva, Lonnie, yourself, and you would be working, I just got confused by your language, there wouldn't be somebody from the FSRN group that you'd be negotiating with in those meetings?
I'm talking about constituting our team of negotiators.
It's
our team of negotiators, and we're just not sure who will be negotiating for them at this point. That'll be hopefully clarified in a couple weeks.
That negotiations would then take place between you and Lonnie, or the whole group, and then, or
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, once they have their team together and we push forward, and then they talk with us, those conversations just be between yourself and representative from them, or the whole group?
No, the intent is the group. That's the intent. Yeah.
Okay.
So the who would like to serve on this? Bobby, I serve. Alan.
One more point of clarification. We hope you won't appoint more than two or maybe three people.
The task force is defined as three people, and we'll vote via STD. Anybody else? Yeah, for three seats, we have now four candidates. Zarina's interested, and Sarv is interested. Is anybody else interested? Big fun. All right. So we have those five candidates. There'll be an STD vote, and what I'd like to do is prepare the ballot tonight, and we'll do it during your business tomorrow, so it's not to take any more of our time. Is there any objection to that?
No. Mr. Chair, who is the fifth candidate?
Zarina.
Okay.
Is it Iban? Did Iban raise your hand? Okay.
Could you just read the names?
I will. Zarina, Mary, Ray, Alan, and myself. And after I speak to him tonight, I may reconsider.
Mr. Chair, I would object to joining the business that I prefer to go under unfinished business.
I'm just worried about the time. Okay, unfinished business. Yeah, that's more appropriate. Unfinished business. Okay, balloting for, and maybe Ambos will convince me that it's improper of me, but I want to be honest.
One question. How many people are we electing? Do we have five?
Of course, you were on whether you were chair last year.
Dave, quick comment.
Yes.
I just want to suggest to Greg that consider inviting one of the news directors to serve on this team, because hopefully coming out of what we all hope is a successful negotiation and merger will be a closer working relationship day to day between the news departments and FSRN. So I think if a news director was at the table of the process, it would increase the chances of a successful collaboration rather than, you know, misunderstandings down the line.
I'd like to bring that to the other people that I'm working with on this.
Okay, and I'm sure you'll let us know what you decide. Okay, we are now at the point in the agenda where there was a break, but there is no longer a break. I recommend that we take, because I think people's attention is fine, we take 5 minutes, return in 5 minutes, and we'll have the ED report discussion. Is there any objection to that 5-minute break? We'll see you back here at 4:30.